Any good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Steve Lehman, News Channel 5.
That's me.
That's him. Next 4 hours. Got a great show for you. We're excited about it. Our phones are off, unlike D-Mace. You like it when I'm listening to Morning Drive. He said it was his watch, his Apple Watch.
Telling him he needs to get off the seat and get moving?
Well, I told him. I
get
said,
some steps in?
If you can't figure out how to silence your phone, whenever I'm listening to your all show that cracks me up in the morning, if you can't figure out how to turn off your phone, I'm just going to start calling you like I did Hal Gill when he was on the air with them.
It messed him up.
He didn't know what to do. I said, I'm going to start doing that with you. I'm going to start calling you, doing your show. So, what's going on?
Not much. I'm curious about you. Are you pulling the Vrabel this week, these late-night hockey games? You got the air mattress in the corner just sleeping here at 102.5 The Game Studios?
No air mattress. Today, as I've talked to a couple people this morning, they're like, you know, how's it? And I'm like, well, one, this is year six, so I'm kind of used to this every year.
Sure.
But you don't really ever get used to it. But here's the deal. It's not today that I'm worried about. It's tomorrow. I'm going to need your help tomorrow. By the way, if you could, second day. Make sure the back is in good working order tomorrow, because you may need to carry me for a couple segments.
I mean, I'm here for you.
All right? So that I'm just giving you a fair warning that tomorrow is really the day.
Vrabel and the staff set the bar high, though. Like, little sleep, didn't see the family. They go out and they blast the Patriots. So I actually expect tomorrow to be one of your best shows.
I hope that's the case. That would be great. I hope it's better than even though they won. Let me just tell you my quick observations.
You predicted that, by the way. You thought the last night was going to be perhaps the night where it not came undone, but perhaps the good fortune and the clutch plays that have marked the early season on the road for the Preds might be the night where that comes to an end.
I felt like the Anaheim game was the stumble game, even though when you looked at it, when you look at their body of work, you're like, how could that be the stumble game? Anaheim hasn't been very good. I knew the stinging loss of 5-1 to Minnesota, where they got boat raced at home, was going to, you know, be in their crawl. And just two, they get up for the Predators, right? I mean, these two teams get up for each other. So I just felt like this was I had a weird vibe. Like, if there was going to be a stumble, if the record wasn't going to happen, it would probably be because of the Anaheim game. They came dangerously close to keeping that record alive, but they lost in a shootout. Obviously, no Victor Arvidsson, no Calle Järnkrok. Anthony Boteto was on the wing on the fourth line. Then he had to slide back to the defensive.
PK went out for a while,
so it was a crazy game. They're going to have their hands full again tonight against the Sharks. So we'll see how this all plays out, but we're going to get into all that. The power play is going to be a heavy discussion piece because it's bad right now. But here's the deal. I feel like every season there's been kind of that theme because, let's be honest, no team is perfect, right? There is no such thing as perfection.
No.
So you're going to have something you know you need to get better at. Last year it was about being more disciplined on the ice, and they never were disciplined for the entire season. And it didn't cost them until – the playoffs, where, you know, they lost in seven in the second round, but they were undisciplined the entire year, and it didn't hurt them because they were the best team in the regular season. This year, they got to get the power play going. I can't imagine it's not going to end up – like, it'll work its way out. It won't end up being the best power play unit in the league, probably somewhere in between. It won't be the worst where they are right now, but eventually they'll start – you know, they're just too good, and, you know, it'll start happening – but they're probably, you know, going to be in the middle of the pack when it's all said and done. What does that mean? I don't know. They're so good on 5-on-5, it may be just like last year. It may be the 18th best or 20th best power play unit this entire regular season, but they may end up being the best team in the regular season again. Maybe it doesn't hurt them.
People would kill for the 18th or 20th best power play at the moment. I mean, people last night on Twitter, when the Preds were going on the power play, they were actually instructing someone to just take a minor penalty to cancel it out so they could play 4-on-4. That's how little faith people have in the Preds' power play right now. 0-for-7 last night, the only one really that had much for looks in my mind was the one in overtime, the 4-on-3. They peppered Gibson at that point, and I think that's the one in particular they're going to lament that they didn't get one to go home. Ryan Johansson had a chip shot put back right in front that Gibson made an incredible save on. But I don't get why they're so bad on the power play. And to me, the biggest thing, they could probably stand to shoot more, but the biggest thing to me is they can't even get the puck in the zone.
They had five shots in overtime on that power play.
Right.
They ended up with 10 in overtime. They had five on that. I mean, they were peppering Gibson.
And you know why? Because they had the puck in the zone almost the entire time. And maybe that's because you take a couple more guys off the ice.
Right.
There's more space or whatever.
Yeah.
But during regulation last night, when it was the typical 5-on-4 power play, the Preds couldn't get the puck in the zone. And I just don't understand how that can be the case.
One of the alarming moments for me is on this last homestand, and I'm drawing blanks on the game. They all start running together. I don't remember if it was Vegas, which game it was, but they had the 4 minutes, the double minor. I think it was in the second period.
I think it was Vegas.
And they recorded 4 full minutes of a man advantage, and they recorded 2 shots. And
yep.
I was like, ooh, like, eek. Like, it's one thing not to score, because, I mean, that happens. It's not guaranteed. I mean, you'd like to think if you're out on the double minor, 4 full minutes, you're probably going to get one to go. It's not that they didn't score. It was like they recorded 2 shots in
right.
4 minutes of a man advantage.
And that's the thing, is we oftentimes hear Peter Laviolette talk about what? When he's talking about a guy and you're saying, man, X guy hasn't scored for a couple weeks. Are you concerned? And he'll say, well, not really, because I think he's playing the right game and he's getting chances. So at some point, one of these is going to go. It's just the law of averages. It's not breaking his way right now. But he's getting the chances. He's playing the right way. I think that's the concern right now if you're looking at the Predators' power play, is for the most part, they're not even getting chances. They're not even putting themselves in a position to have success. So it's not one of those where it's like, oh, man, he doinked it off the post. Too bad. That guy's just steak bitten. One of these days, those are going to go, because they're not even giving themselves that opportunity.
Yeah, to your point, that's exactly the way the Dallas Stars felt about Tyler Seguin's start, because they're like, yeah, it's not going, but look at his numbers. Look at his chances. Look what he's doing. It's going to start falling. Like, we know those opportunities. It's not – if you're not getting the opportunities, that's one thing. It's kind of like if you don't play the lottery, you're not going to win. If
sure.
you don't shoot, you can't score. Well, I guess people could hit it off you, but, you know, you could have a deflection off your body part. But you get the point. And Seguin was very, very active around the net in his shooting percentages, and all the numbers were there saying, man, his goals should be much higher. And now it's starting to fall. I mean, so to your point, yeah, they need to correct some things. Like I said, they will. What will it end up being in the end? You know, it's kind of like going back the first 2 years of the brand new overtime format. Remember how bad they were? Remember how people dreaded them going to overtime?
I mean, they almost missed the playoffs because they couldn't get points in overtime.
That's what I'm saying. It's just there's always something you have to work on. And, you know, luckily for them, that problem can only hurt you in the regular season. We knew it couldn't hurt them in the playoffs.
Sure.
These problems that we're talking about the last 2 years, it can hurt you in the playoffs.
I mean, that's the thing. I guess the other problem might be worse in some ways because it almost cost them a playoff berth 1 year, and you've got to actually get there before you can make a run. But you are right. I mean, last year, the penalties didn't really affect them in the course of 82 games. It started to in the playoffs when they went out in round two. This year, that's my fear of the power play. Yes, I do think it will get better. I don't think they will end up at the bottom of the league on the power play by the time it's all said and done. But how much better can it get? If this is kind of who you are through 20 games, how much better can you get with 62 more games of it?
Victor Arvidsson's out of the lineup. That certainly hurts.
Sure, it helps. But like you said, maybe they get to 18, maybe they get to 20 by the end of the year. And that would be my concern of a Predators fan, is if you get into the playoffs, specialty teams matter. And if you can't capitalize when the other team gives you the advantage, gives you the opportunities, if you don't even get chances off of it, you're going to struggle.
I owe this guy to get him in before we get to our first break, because he was in the Honda Center last night. Now, this is a Predators fan right here. Wayne,
there
what's
you go,
up?
Wayne.
How was your experience? I know in the end they didn't win the shootout, but how was the experience?
It was a great experience. That was one of the first times that I've been on a road game where I've looked at their fans and they've looked at me going, I cannot believe they made that save between Pekka and Gibson last night.
Yeah, they were good. They were really, really good. The goaltender shined for sure.
Did it look to me, though, it might have been my jet lag. Did it look like the team was jet lagged last night?
I mean, they admit it. I mean, they went a long stretch in the second period. They couldn't get a shot off. I mean, they admitted after the game that it wasn't their best performance, for sure. Kevin Fiala definitely said it after the game. He's the one who had the lone goal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad at some point. I literally looked at them. We got to the fourth round of the shootout, and Raquel came out, and I looked at everybody and said, he's going to score.
So quickly tell us your trip. Now, did you went out to Anaheim yesterday, and are you already back?
I left Sunday night. I just got back literally 30 minutes ago.
Wow. That is a quick trip.
Now, that is a true fan right there. Now, is this something you do every year?
I go to one away game every year. Now, this time around, it was a bit different because I only had one vacation day, so I had to take a red eye back this morning.
Holy moly. And you're going to work today?
I am going to work today.
Okay, we will not tell the people you work with, your coworkers, about your trip.
I feel like Will Ferrell in the campaign. Am I maintaining? I feel like I'm maintaining.
Well, you'll get some much-needed sleep tonight. That's outstanding. Sorry that they couldn't finish it off, but I hope it was all worth it.
It is always worth it going on an away game and just letting them see, yes, we are here and we will be loud and we will be proud.
Awesome. Awesome job, Wayne. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good luck at work.
He tweeted me yesterday morning. He's like, I'll be in Anaheim in 4.5 hours. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, you're just going out. And so, yeah, that's a fan right there.
That is.
Flew out to Anaheim, and he's back already.
I am also giving you zero sympathy now for your late. He flew out.
And he's going to work today.
And took the red eye home to show up at work today. And my guess is he's not just talking about the game for 4 hours.
He is going to drink a pot of coffee for sure today.
Or something. 5 hours.
Yeah, he's got to have help. He has to have help. All right, we'll come back. Ryan Whitney, NHL Network. We talk to him next. Becker on Darren Adonik, Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 alongside. Our next guest, you can watch on NHL Network this afternoon, Ryan Whitney. He's going to be on NHL Now with EJ Raddick and Jackie Redman. That's today at 3 o'clock. Love that show. Watch it all the time. Check your local channel listings on where you can find it here in the Middle Tennessee area. Ryan, how you doing?
Good, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Just during the break, I was telling Steve about this. On Friday, we had a caller call in and say that they are watching the Predators game the night before. Their cable went out. They went outside the house to check the cable wires to see if what was going on, why they couldn't watch their Predators game. And she got attacked by a bat. And
Yikes.
It was such a bizarre story. I'm like, I think I'm getting punked. I think this has got to be a joke. There was a prize attached. I think she just wanted the prize. She just tweeted me during the break her hospital records. She did get attacked by a bat while she was out looking for her cable wire so she could watch the Predators game.
That's passion, right?
Is that
there.
Dedication or what?
Fighting through a bat attack.
Is that dedication or what? That's what's going on in this market, Ryan.
That makes sense. I mean, to me, it's if not the best, at least top three best atmospheres, best places to play right now. I think people love that city. I mean, I know I'm from Boston, and felt like half the city went down because they know how fun Nashville is to watch the Titans beat up on the Patriots, but it just shows how great of a city it is to live in, to play in, and then, you know, once you bring the hockey involved, these fans are just so excited every night, so loud, the place gets rocking, and teams don't like going there, so I don't blame anyone for enjoying watching the Predators as much as possible. They're, right now, I'd say, you know, a tough loss last night, they still got a point, they're the best team in the league.
We were talking about this in the last segment. You know this better than us. It's a long season. Teams aren't perfect. Even the best teams, they're not perfect. There's something they have to work on. Last year, it was the constant theme of the Predators were constantly in the box having to kill off penalties. They ended up playing the entire regular season as the most penalized team in the league. It didn't hurt them. They ended up winning the President's Trophy. So it did not affect them in the regular season. Right now it's the power play struggles. They're last in the league. They had seven opportunities last night. No power play. As a player, when you're going through whatever's going on where something's not working, special teams, five on five, what have you, what are you actively talking about in the room to try to fix it? How does that work? When you know the problem, but you're trying to figure out how to make it go away.
Yeah, I think that power play, especially when you're struggling, especially when you have the skill of Nashville, you just have to simplify things. Such a cliche, I think hockey players listen and are like, well, that's what everyone says, but it is the answer in terms of just getting pucks to the net. So not only are you trying to get more pucks to the net, but every time there's a shot from the point, and they got some guys who can really bring it, there needs to be a body in front. So sometimes, you know, you get just a little bit plain on the outside where I think guys are trying to make the perfect play. You get the puck, you have a chance to shoot it, you want to make one more pass, have it be a tap-in. You know, the defenseman up top maybe gets a shot blocked as opposed to making sure it gets by the first guy, penalty killing. So there's a bunch of little things that go into making a power play good. I will say Nashville, I think with their roster and especially who they have defensively, you know, running these power plays from up top, they're going to be fine. It is shocking. I mean, this is decently far into the season. You're getting towards the quarter mark. In terms of them being last, I would have never guessed it, but I do think that at some point it'll click. And then from there, it'll just really keep going because they have the one issue of just trying to do a little bit too much right now. And that can be solved. It is surprising it hasn't been solved yet.
Very wide open question for you. When you see the Predators, when you watch the Predators, this year's team in particular, even though it's basically the same team as last year, what do you see, Ryan?
I see Ryan Johansson taking a huge step and looking like one of the best players in the league. And it's always been there, and I think he's always had stretches where, you know, for 10 games he'll just dominate and then maybe go a little quiet. It seems this entire year he's just been on kind of a different level, and it makes sense. You know, I think maybe he's just learning. Laviolette's taught him a lot since he's been there, and his skill will always be there. It'll always be able to take over games at certain points. But I think effort-wise, I think maybe if there was ever a complaint, and it's really hard to find one with that guy, but if there ever was a complaint, it was that he'd take a couple games off effort-wise. It almost looked like he was a little sluggish, but this year it just seems every shift he's just focused, he's playing quicker, he's playing harder. Nobody likes playing against him, so not only is he skilled, he can be tough to play against, be kind of not a rat, but somebody that, you know, the opposition hates. And that's just great. I've noticed that. And then I always notice their top 4D. I always say it's the best top 4 in the league. So that and Rene. And even when Rene was out, you got to give Saros a lot of credit. I mean, he looked phenomenal. If you can ever have a backup that's that good, it just takes the pressure off in terms of if your starter ever gets injured or just needs some rest. So it's just such a deep team. It's very hard to not find a bunch of good things that they've done the entire season.
Very good observation on Ryan Johansson on your part. While he hasn't said this, we've certainly talked about it. I've noticed the same thing, talked about it a lot, pregame, postgame, this radio show. You know what? Your employer may have had something to do with that. Ryan, do you know where I'm going with this? You know, in the offseason, what we all do, our list, right? We all have our list of everything. And NHL Network did their list. And top 20 centermen, guess who wasn't on the list? Ryan Johansson.
He's going on a little bit of prove some people wrong tour.
Look, you know this better than anybody. Yeah. I've been doing this a long time. Coaches and players say they don't listen to what people are saying about them. They don't read what's being written about them. It's all baloney. They do. And like I said, he hasn't said anything, but I know he knows about it. He has to know about it. And don't tell me that it's not serving as a little bit of a motivator this year that he was left out in the top 20 centermen in the league.
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't disagree with you. I mean, I think that he's probably looking at that like, wow. I mean, one, I think they're wrong. I'm going to go prove them. And two, it shouldn't even be a question. So maybe that's had something to do with it. I think sometimes those things get a little overrated. But you're right. I mean, if he's looking at his own game and where he wants to be, the player he wants to be, and sees that, it's definitely a motivator that he easily could have kind of taken and run with this year.
Ryan Whitney on the line with us. I do want to ask you something about already two coaching changes in the Western Conference, one in the Predators division, and one, believe it or not, they're not going to see on this five-game road trip, even though they just left Southern California. Let's start in Los Angeles with the Kings. John Stevens It didn't last very long. 1 year last year, they get to the playoffs. Yeah, they got swept by Vegas, but he barely made it, 10 games into this season. So barely over a year, he's out. One, what did you think of that move? L.A. has had tremendous struggles. Quick hook there. And then, of course, all the work that Joel Quenneville did in Chicago, quite a run for a decade, 3 cups in 6 years. He's out in Chicago. And, oh, by the way, it hasn't gotten any better. They've lost 8 in a row.
Yeah, it's crazy times at those two teams that have been powerhouses, it seems, for 10 years. That's just where they're at right now. And in L.A., John Stevens, I think it was a little quick. I look at that roster, and we've said a lot on the NHL Network here, it's a slower team. They're not super quick, and it seems like that's what you have to be very good in the NHL now. So it's tough for them. Jonathan Quick went down, and now Willie Desjardins there, and Jack Campbell, their backup, he's now injured. So it's a very tough time in L.A. with not much bright, it doesn't look great in the future either. I mean, I don't know where they're going to go from here for the rest of this season, and it's going to be tough. And then in Chicago, it's kind of a similar thing. I mean, the Panarin trade in Chicago was kind of seemed like the beginning of the end in terms of Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman's relationship. Maybe not the beginning of the end, but kind of the final straw where they really didn't get along and see eye to eye. And that's turned out to be a bad trade. I mean, Panarin's one of the top players in the league, and him and Kane had some incredible chemistry, so it is shocking to see where those two teams have gone. And you got a feel for both guys who come in and take over as the job of coaches, because it hasn't looked any better since they've been there.
Ryan Whitney, analyst for the NHL Network, with us here on 102.5 The Game. Ryan, you mentioned it here during the interview that we're nearing the quarter pole of the NHL season. Are the Canucks this good? They're on top of the Pacific Division right now. Do they have staying power?
I don't know. I didn't see this coming at all. I mean, I'm just as shocked as anyone else. I want to say no, but it just seems that something's cooking there. And obviously, the main thing being Elias Pettersson. And I mean, he has moments. He kind of looks like Pavel Datsyuk. I mean, he has some incredible moves. I don't know if you saw. He would have scored an OT winner against Buffalo. He got tripped up for a penalty. It would have been the goal of the year. He's been game-changing for them, and he makes the team a completely different team in terms of offensive and stuff, and Bo Horvath and Brock Besser, too. So maybe they do have staying power. I didn't think their D was good enough. I wasn't sure about the goaltending, although I played with Jakob Markstrom, and he does have moments of kind of brilliance, so maybe he's really figured it out. And if anything, though, it is, it's very surprising and good for the league, I'd say. I mean, you know, you plan on a team being poor and really struggling, and all of a sudden they're playing really well. It's definitely good, and it definitely makes the league a little deeper. I think this is the deepest I've ever seen in the NHL. It seems like every night anyone could beat anyone. I've never really seen it like this, never seen it so close in the standings, so it's a good time to be an NHL fan.
So when you look at those standings as we near about the 20-game mark, give me your surprises so far. One in a good way, one in a team that's been a disappointment.
I think a surprise has been Buffalo in a good way. I think they've really improved. They brought a ton over in the trade for Ryan O'Reilly, who's, he's been fabulous in St. Louis. But Buffalo is just, I think Jack Eichel's really picked up his game. They're getting some great play. Rasmus Dahlin, he has it. Lit the world on fire as a rookie as Elias Pettersson, but if you watch Buffalo play, he's solid. He can skate like the wind. He can log minutes, so he's a game changer. And they got a bunch of guys playing some really good hockey. And in a disappointment way, it might be the St. Louis Blues. I know I just mentioned the O'Reilly trade, but I expected a lot from this year. So did they. They signed Tyler Bozak. They traded for O'Reilly. They got Tarasenko. They got a bunch of really good players up front. Alex Steen, Pietrangelo on D. And they've just really struggled, and it's shocking to see.
You get to see a lot of the Maple Leafs, obviously, and pay close attention to them. What do you make about them? Because I think a lot of people looked at the moves they made this summer and thought, watch out, this is a team that absolutely is a contender for the Stanley Cup this year. They've been good, but maybe not great so far. What do you make of the Maple Leafs?
Well, I think they'll be right there at the end of the year. I don't know about in the Cup, but they'll be a playoff team. Damage. I mean, Austin, it has really hurt them, and then they don't have William Nylander signed, and that's kind of a long throw in Toronto, but they're still, I mean, one of the top teams, especially offensively. Morgan Riley's Norris Trophy candidate right now. And, you know, Frederick Anderson's still doing his thing. They're a team that's going to be there right at the end of the year.
You like doing this stuff? How you like life on the other side?
I like it. I actually have a meeting right now for the show, so I got to run. But I do like coming on. I appreciate it, you guys.
Good visit. Good. We'll talk to you down the road.
Bye.
Ryan Whitney. He's got. This is his job. This is what he does now.
We appreciate him fitting us in right there.
NHL Now with EJ Raddick and Jackie Redman and our guest Ryan Whitney. That'll be today at 3 o'clock on NHL Network. Back with more of Darren and Donnick next. We'll get in hot and heavy into the Titans matchup in Indy against the Colts. That's coming up in the second hour of the program. We'll get the Titans side with Teron Davenport, and then we'll head up to Indy and get the Colts side at the bottom of the hour. So heavy discussion on that coming up in the next hour of the program. Steve, there is a big press conference today that is going to take place. We'll have the mayor, David Briley, SEC commissioner on his new contract, Greg Sankey, Sean Henry, president and CEO of the Predators, and Scott Ramsey, who runs, speaking of president and CEO, so two presidents and CEOs, Scott Ramsey of the Nashville Sports Council. They will all be in attendance, and later this afternoon, they will announce more good things for our city.
They certainly will.
When it comes to the hardwoods.
They certainly will. And I think one of the best events that we get pretty much on a yearly basis with the SEC men's basketball tournament, women's basketball tournament too when it is here, but to put a March Madness event in Bridgestone Arena, you bring in fan bases from all over the Southeast to converge on downtown Nashville, the economic impact of that, you color downtown with a bunch of team colors and mascots and all that sort of thing and get good basketball in the middle of March. And they already had a deal through 2025, with 2022, I guess, being the 1 year remaining where the women's tournament comes here. Every other year is the men's.
Is that where they're going to Tampa?
And yes, and now they're extending the men's tournament out to 2035, which also converts 2026, which was going to be a women's tournament, into a men's tournament. So between now and 2035,
this is going to be the
SEC
hub.
Men's basketball tournament will be at Bridgestone Arena every year except for 2022.
And that's where it belongs. In my opinion. Am I biased? Sure. But have I been to other SEC basketball tournaments in other venues? Yeah. Yes, I have.
We're just
and
in
you
St.
know
Louis
what?
This spring.
It doesn't work. It's not the same. It just makes more sense here. I've been to the Superdome in New Orleans. It was awful. You're playing in a big, vast football stadium, and it just didn't work. If you didn't have Kentucky, you got nothing. It looks ridiculous. All the years of the Georgia Dome. I spent many, many years in the Georgia Dome covering the SEC basketball tournament. If you don't have Kentucky, you got nothing. I was in that place when the tornado hit. That wasn't fun. I also tore my ACL at the Georgia Dome covering the SEC basketball. There's another reason. There's another strike. Two strikes against Atlanta. But in all seriousness, they have the football stuff. Atlanta gets a lot of stuff. It just makes sense here. We know the way that downtown is set up, it's perfect for fan bases. They love coming to Nashville. And, oh, by the way, that time of year, weather should be great. Right? You spill out of the arena, and you just spill right onto Broadway, and you just go have fun until it's time for the next game you need to attend. It just makes sense. This is where it belongs, and I'm glad today they're going to make it official, and it looks like it's going to be here for a long, long time.
I saw some college basketball writers reacting to the news.
Were they dancing?
Well, they said 2035. That's it, huh? Well, why not extend it longer? So I think to your point, everyone loves it. I think this will be a move that is met with almost universal praise. Maybe if you're St. Louis or Tampa or someplace that wants the event in your city every once in a while, you're not going to love this. But I think for the vast majority of SEC fans and the people who cover the league, this is a home run.
You were there in St. Louis.
Yeah.
How was it there?
It was okay. I wouldn't say it was awful or like a failure, but just exactly what you said, Darren. I mean, Nashville's so set up where you can go downtown and there's restaurants right there and there's bars right there and there's tons of them. All 20,000 people going to the arena can go to a different bar or restaurant and then go, and you're fine. In St. Louis, you're limited. I mean,
there's
Union Station's around. A couple blocks away. There's a couple bars here and there.
Not much.
But there's not much.
And there's not a Cardinals game going on. Not much going on.
They've done some things to what is now Enterprise Center to make it more palatable, to make it a better arena. But there's just nothing around it, and that's the problem with so many of these things. New Orleans, I think, is a great place to host events, but you're right. When you put it in the Dome, it's just way too big.
Way too
for
big.
For a conference basketball tournament. Way too big.
We have learned, really, about everything, honestly, in sports. Bigger is not better. Okay, whether
especially
it's,
for basketball.
Well, it just everything. Like NASCAR had their phase where they thought bigger was better, sure. And they have obviously regressed, and they know that bigger is not better.
I'm not sure, by the way, just quick aside, a couple weekends ago in Martinsville, like half of the track was covered in tarps.
Yeah.
In terms
no,
of
I know. That's, I mean,
the seats.
Remember, Daytona just did their big renovation. They cut out, what was it, 70,000 seats they
amazing.
Took out of the equation in Daytona. Now, they did the right thing. It's all about luxury right now. It's all about big seats and big aisles and big – so they did it right, but they eliminated like 70,000 seats in Daytona.
Wow.
Football, we've realized bigger is not better. It's just not. Unless you have a magical season or you have that magical coach that can keep it winning at a high clip. Does it work in Clemson? Sure. Does it work at Alabama? Sure. Does it work at Ohio State? Sure. But we can name all the programs on their hand. The other ones, if you're not good, I mean – by the way, LSU at work this year, but have you seen some of the down years, what it's like at Tiger Stadium?
It can get not so full.
It can get lonely there. It's not this imposing place to play because people aren't interested. Bigger is not better in sports. We have found out unless you're doing the Final Four, and I don't like that it's even set up that way for the Final Four, but I get it. I understand you're not going to turn down that money. I don't know why people have this dying interest to go, just, I guess, to say that you were there, but it can't be a fun seat. If you're anywhere not even close to the floor, I mean, what are you watching? I mean, you're just seeing movement on the field. You don't really know what's going on the court, but nonetheless, they finally eliminated all that for the other round, so you finally have a basketball venue only until you get to the final stage.
No more 40,000-seat arenas for first and second round
games.
So
bad.
It was.
So bad. But it just makes sense for it to be in Nashville for a long time. I've been saying this for a long time. I've said it to Greg Sankey many, many times. Like, what are you doing? Nothing against St. Louis. Nothing against Tampa. Nothing against New Orleans. All these other places. It doesn't work. It works here. It's a great atmosphere here. It works for the fan bases. The weather's great. And the setup is great. By the way, when you park your car, you can just leave it. You don't need your car anymore, and you can go do everything you need to do the entire time on your trip.
As a matter of fact, we would prefer you leave your car when you get here. And to Greg Sankey's credit, I think he gets all of that. I think that's why
he loves Nashville.
I think that's why this move was done. It was the SEC before that I think had some desire, I guess, at times to spread it around. I mean, they knew Nashville was best. That's why the previous contract was done the way it was. But I think they wanted to give the appearance that they were still going to spread it around to other people and try to keep other people involved. And I think Greg Sankey came in and said, why are we doing this? Nashville's clearly the best. Whenever we leave, the tournament isn't as good. So why don't we just go there every year? And he's basically making that happen with the new extension through 2035, which I think is just fantastic.
And, look, you have to factor this in, right? More people want to cover it here. So you're going to get more attention, more coverage, because people want to go there and cover it. They're going to go to their bosses and say, hey, we need to cover this. And so you get more coverage in Nashville because people want to be here.
Yeah, you do. And
it's selfish, but, whatever works.
Sure.
If it gets you more coverage, that's what you want as a league.
I'm with you. I think we should have as many events as possible in Bridgestone Arena along this line, because Bridgestone Arena is such a great arena and the location is almost unrivaled. There really are very few places that are professional sports arenas that sit in as prime location with as much around them to do as Bridgestone Arena does. This is great. I love this. I think we need more NCAA regionals here. whether it be first and second round or regional final at some points. As much as the NHL can do in Nashville, they should do in Nashville. If the NFL can figure out more things beyond the draft to do in Nashville, they should do it in Nashville and use the arena if necessary, because the downtown location is just perfect. The other thing I think that Nashville really should go for at some point is the Frozen Four. As big as a hockey town as this has become, bring the four best collegiate hockey teams to town, put them in Bridgestone Arena, which has become maybe the face or the arena, if you will, of the NHL over the last few years. I think that would be a hit here. I think those types of events need to come here as much as possible.
Can I be a snob for just a second?
Sure.
Just because I've been to all these events, we've graduated from first and second round of the NCAA tournament. It's time to move on from that. It's time for a bigger. It's time for a Sweet 16 in Nashville. We've earned it. Okay, we've had our fair share of first and second rounds, and we get Cincinnati, and we get Xavier, and we get Florida State all the time. I get it, but it's time for us to get a Sweet 16 matchup. I've been to all the first and second round matchups. That's great. We've graduated from that. It's just like the UFC, who I support. I'm all for. We've graduated past fight nights. Okay, bring a pay-per-view card here, or don't come here. Okay, and I know why they're doing it. It's to keep the commission alive, because they need to figure out a way to make money, because they don't know how. But we've graduated from fight night cards. It's time to bring. So there's certain things. It's been nice hosting these things, fight nights for the UFC, first and second round for the NCAA. But let me just be a Nashville snob for a second. It's time to graduate from those things.
I'm selfish with you, and I hope that will be the case at some point. I can tell you that there is some level of belief in the Chamber of Commerce and the Sports Commission that Nashville is actually better off in the first weekend, because you get 8 fan bases to come and you fill up 8 fan bases worth of hotel rooms and 8 fan bases worth of restaurants and all those sort of things. Where if you go to the second weekend, yes, your matchups may be better, but you're less guaranteed that there'll be localized teams because of the way the bracketing works, and you only have half of the number of fan bases. So in terms of an economic impact or what's good for the city, it may not be as good to get the regional round. But I, as a sports fan, am 100% with you. Let's move on from the 1-16 and 2-15 matchups. Give me some Sweet 16 and Elite 8 matchups.
Yeah. I want Sister Jean in Nashville.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, did you see that they lost their opener?
No.
They lost to Fordham on a dunk at the buzzer.
Uh-oh.
So perhaps Sister Jean's magic has worn off a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Furman. Sorry. Thank you. I got my F schools mixed up. Furman. The Paladins.
They will make that official today, what we just discussed, at 4:45 this afternoon. So good news for our city. SEC basketball is going to be here to stay for a long time. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour next. This Friday, the Fort Ice Center is offering a free public skate session from 7:30 until 9 o'clock. That's in the evening, for any skater that brings 3 or more non-perishable food items to donate. All donations will be benefiting the branch of Nashville right here in Antioch. Leading up the skate, there will be some great high school hockey that evening, as well as Middle Tennessee State going up against UAH. I guess that would be Alabama Huntsville. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The Fort Ice Center is located at 5264 Hickory Hollow Parkway in Antioch. That is one of my many homes away from home. It's a great place. By the way, they're always packed. And as soon as that ice opens up in Bellevue, that's going to help alleviate all this. There's just not enough sheets of ice in this city, and Fort Ice benefits from that because it has changed that whole area. We were out and about after the post game here, after I did the Saturday game against the Stars. We were out at a store looking at flooring in Antioch, and we ended up sitting down in a restaurant right there close by talking to a big Preds fan there that I see at the arena all the time. She worked there. She said that a bunch of the hockey teams had just come in the night before, and I said, how much has that happened? She said, all the time. Wow. Hockey teams going to Fort Ice. Right there, eating in the area. So they benefit greatly. It's changed that whole area right there, nothing was going on at a mall that was dead, to now, you know, it has changed things. And so opportunity for you to take some non-perishable items, 7:30 to 9 to Fordyce Center on Friday night, free public skate session. And, of course, all the donations will be for a good cause.
Great cause, for sure. Even the most casual fan recognizes the impact the Predators have had in terms of their visibility and what they do in the community and how hockey's caught on from an NHL level in this town. But you point out things like the Fordyce Center and these other rinks around that are bringing people in. The youth programs around here, I mean, 10 years ago, were there a handful?
Nothing. Like
and
today.
And now nothing. You've got teams traveling the country and playing at a high level. Playing
the junior
at a very
Preds
high
teams.
Level. The junior Preds teams are really good.
Really good.
And you've got so many other young kids who are jumping into the drill. And, you know, the Predators had to get good. They had to make a real push to, I think, grab some of the people here because it was a non-traditional hockey market at one point. And so if you didn't grow up with hockey, you needed to see a winner. You needed to see some proof that this was going to be fun for you to latch onto and make your team. But you know what? We're at the point now where if you're a 20-year-old, if you're a college kid, if you're a high school kid, you don't know Nashville. You don't know Middle Tennessee without the Predators. And the vast majority of your recent memory is of them being really good. And so you've got kids now who are jumping on the ice and wanting to be hockey players. And you've got the kids who are maybe a little bit older than that and they're not going to play hockey, who think it's great. And I think a lot of them think it's their favorite sport in town right now. They'd much rather go to a Predators game than to a Titans game, frankly.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, unfortunately. I was watching some of the Giants 49ers last
night.
I'm
sorry.
I know. Eli Manning is not good. I know that's kind of stating the obvious, but watching him last night, wow. Like this has to be it, right?
He can't
throw the ball anymore. I mean, did you catch any of the game? I mean, you have, by the way, Saquon Barkley is ridiculous. Odell Beckham, an incredible talent. Sterling Shepard, incredible talent. Their offensive line is awful. Awful, oh, yeah. Awful, awful. And Eli, in the fourth quarter, has Odell Beckham streaking downfield in double coverage, blows by the coverage. It looked like a college game. That's how wide open he was. And he had to basically stop running his route because the ball was going to be 8 yards behind him. Eli couldn't make the throw. If he hits him in stride, he could crawl to the end zone.
Yeah, there's no question about it. When he got the ball back with whatever it was, 2:23 left, and they were down, and they did eventually drive down the field to win. But when he got it back, one of my friends sent me a text that started with the emoji for noodles and then the bicep arm, and he said, you know, noodle arm got the ball back. Let's see what he can do. And I think that's fairly apt for Eli right now. I'm sorry to say it. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. He's had a great career, but he looks old, and
he looks
done.
We were talking about it here last night before the Preds game. I said he's got two rags, one on the right side and one on the left side. That's what he looks like. It's awful. I mean, some of the throws he's trying to hit – Saquon. Oh, by the way, I left out Evan Engram. They have talent on offense. If they can,
none of it on the offensive line, though,
no.
Which is a huge problem. They've totally mismanaged up front, which is getting Eli killed, which probably contributes to some of this. But you're right. At the skill positions, the Giants have some real talent.
He's got these guys open who have real talent. Like I said, Shepard and Beckham and Engram and Barkley, even coming out of the backfield. He can't even hit them. I mean, he was missing throws badly. I mean, I think it was Barkley streaking out of the backfield. He was trying to throw back shoulder. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
I mean, not even close. It's just kind of a wow. Like, I know it's been bad all year, but last night was a real eye-opener for me because I paid a little bit closer attention, and I now see what everybody's talking about. Like, he is really, really bad. You see why they're off to a really, really bad start. They're not a good team. They're not going to be a good team because he's not good. He's just not good. Odell Beckham, I feel like, is just going to get wasted this year because anything past 10 yards, their quarterback can't get him. I mean, he can get wide open all day long. The quarterback can't get him the ball.
That's why I can't see the Titans right now losing to the Giants or losing to the Jets. And frankly, probably the Jaguars.
They just should be ashamed of themselves if they do.
Those three teams do not have the quarterback play that should be able to beat this defense that right now ranks number one in the NFL in scoring defense. They just shouldn't be able to do that. Now, Andrew Luck is putting up points on everybody right now. I think that's a challenge. Deshaun Watson, I think, is a good quarterback going to Houston. That's a challenge. The Redskins are playing well. You got Luck again at the end of the season. There are some challenges there. But those three games in December against the Jets, the Jaguars, and the Giants – man, I like the Titans' chances there because of how this defense is playing and how poorly the quarterbacks are playing for those other teams.
If they can get a split, and I know they're going for the sweep these next two games because we've talked about how critical they are, but that would put them at what, 6-5?
Yep.
With real
and 3-1 in the division.
With real manageable games, as we just talked about, down the stretch. Because, yeah, the Redskins look pretty good right now, but you don't know a little bit later what at the end of the year what they're going to look like. Like you said, Giants and Jets, I mean, you have to win those games. I mean, they're bad football teams. The Jags right now, I mean, I don't know how else you could say it. They're just a bad football team. You don't understand why, but they're 3-6. So how can you know, no matter what we think of their talent levels, they're not good. It's a game you should win. You should sweep the Jags. I know it's not going to be easy, but the point is, if you're 6-5.
Is it going to be hard? I mean, we keep saying that because the Jags – I guess still have respect for what they did last year, and we still think that's a potent defense, but the defense hasn't been nearly as good.
No.
And Bortles has been atrocious. This, to me, is a team that is a complete train wreck. They're spiraling out of control at this point. I do think the Titans will get their attention for that game, so you'll probably get their best, whatever that is. But I don't know. I just don't see the Jags recovering from this. So I think they could be a total mess by the time that game comes around.
We'll kick off the second hour with Teron Davenport. He covers the Titans for ESPN.com. We'll talk to Teron next on Darren Adonik, ESPN 102.5 The Game.